It's Thursday, the 24th of April, 2025, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader in Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you news of interest to our veterans and military community here in Arizona. Today we have news from our military news websites, as well as our veteran service organizations publications and websites, and of course from the Veterans Administration. So let's kick this off with an item from Stripes.com. Our first headline, Supreme Court to hear combat injured Marine veterans case challenging compensation limits. This is by Linda F. Hershey of Stars and Stripes from the 22nd of April. Washington. The U.S. Supreme Court is expected to hear arguments starting Monday involving a medically retired Marine Corps veteran who did not receive his full combat-related special compensation after his military service that included two tours in Iraq. Simon Soto, a retired corporal, is claiming the federal government incorrectly imposed a time limit for filing a compensation claim to receive full benefits. The outcome of the class action suit against the U.S. government will likely determine the amount of combat-related special compensation that thousands of other medically retired combat veterans receive from the government, according to court documents. Attorneys for Soto argue the federal government misapplied a 6-year statute of limitations for awarding full combat-related special compensation, though Soto was entitled to higher payments. The tax-free monthly payments are for eligible retired veterans with combat-related injuries. Whether thousands of combat veterans now and into the future lose all or part of the special compensation they earn through service to and sacrifice for our nation is an exceptionally important question that merits this court's review, attorneys for Soto said in court documents. The National Veterans Legal Services Program, a nonprofit organization, filed a class action lawsuit on behalf of Soto. Soto joined the Marine Corps in 2000 and had two deployments to Iraq. His job was in mortuary affairs and involved searching for, identifying, and recovering the remains of war casualties, according to court documents. But Soto began receiving medical treatment for nightmares, depression, and suicidal thoughts related to his work documenting the deaths of fellow soldiers. He was medically retired in 2006. In 2009, Soto received a disability rating from the Department of Veterans Affairs based on his medical diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, a mental health condition that results from witnessing terrifying events. But he did not apply for combat-related special compensation until 2016, according to court documents. Combat-related special compensation is a benefit for military retirees who receive VA compensation for disabilities related to combat or hazardous duty, according to the Defense Department. The compensation restores a portion of retirement pay reduced due to VA disability payments. The Defense Finance and Accounting Service is responsible for awarding and paying combat-related special compensation. The agency processes claims submitted by the retirees' service branch. But the Navy used a 6-year limitation to calculate Soto's retroactive payments, giving him payments dating back to 2010 instead of to 2008, when Congress extended the combat compensation to retirees who served less than 20 years, according to court documents. Retirees are allowed to receive their military retirement pay and VA disability compensation as long as the disability is combat-related, according to the Defense Department. The 2008 National Defense Authorization Act, annual legislation that sets expenditures and policies for the Defense Department, expanded eligibility for combat-related special compensation to include medical retirees with less than 20 years of service, according to the Military Officers Association of America. But the federal government uses a provision called the Barring Act, requiring veterans to file a compensation claim within 6 years of a VA disability rating decision, according to court documents. After the 6-year limit expires, veterans only qualify for up 2 6-years' worth of payments that are due to them. That limitation was applied to Soto's case. When Soto was medically retired, he was placed on the temporary disability retirement list, entitling him to retirement pay according to court documents. He subsequently was awarded permanent retirement pay by the Navy Secretary. Soto applied for and was awarded combat-related special compensation in 2016 based on his diagnosis of PTSD, according to court documents, but he had exceeded the 6-year limitation to receive his full compensation. The Navy assigned an effective date of July 2010, notwithstanding the fact that he met all of the enrollment criteria for January 1, 2008, the effective date of the law that extends the combat-related special compensation entitled to medical retirees such as Mr. Soto, attorneys said. As a result, the Navy awarded Soto 6 years of retroactive payments from July 2010 to June 2016, though he was entitled to 8.5 years of payments from January 2008 to June 2016, his attorney said. The government has used this 6-year statute of limitations policy to pay no more than 6 years of retroactive combat-related special compensation to thousands of other military combat veterans, attorney said. Soto filed a class action lawsuit in U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Texas in March 2017. The other plaintiffs were former service members of the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, and Coast Guard, whose compensation amounts also were limited by the application of the 6-year statute of limitations, according to court documents. The government identified 9,108 former service members in 2021 whose compensation amount had been reduced because of the 6-year statute of limitations. The number of affected veterans has likely increased since that information was collected. In 2021, a district court ruled in favor of Soto and members of the suit. The court found the government was liable to pay the veterans their full compensation according to court documents. But when the government challenged the decision to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, the higher court reversed the ruling in February 2024. Soto appealed to the Supreme Court in September 2024. In a friend of the court brief, Military Veterans Advocacy Incorporated and Disabled American Veterans argued Congress intended to fully compensate these especially valiant military retirees for their sacrifices. And that's Supreme Court to hear combat injured Marine veterans case challenging compensation limits. Our next article: veterans who each lost part of a leg in Afghanistan try for new world record with Grand Canyon hike. This article by Gary Warner of Stars and Stripes is from the 21st of April. Kevin Bittenbender and Kirsty Ennis had done everything they could do by Saturday night for the big jump-off on a 47.5-mile rim-to-rim-to-rim hike at Grand Canyon National Park. Ennis, 34, retired Marine sergeant, had flown in from Chile, where she had hiked Navajo Hoyos del Salado, the tallest volcano in the world. Bittenbender, 56, a retired Army sergeant major, came to northern Arizona from training at his home in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. Before dawn Monday, they planned to start the hike on a nearly 7,000-foot descent from the south rim to the canyon floor and up almost 7,000 feet to the north rim. Then they'd turn around and reverse the path back to the south rim. The veterans are carrying a list of supplies: trekking poles, microspikes, headlamps, rain shells to cover backpacks, water filters, and a collection of energy snacks and electrolyte-filled drinks. The list includes a prosthetics kit, duct tape, metal adhesive, wrench set, glue, spare screw, spare clamp set for forearm crutches, and rubbing alcohol. En route, we'll be checking in for limb and feet health, Ennis said. If legs do not need to come off, we sip a quick snack. If legs need to come off at any point due to concerns, we will stop, but at a minimum, we'll be checking in with each other every 2 hours. Both hikers might need the kit. Ennis had her left leg amputated above the knee following a 2012 helicopter crash in Afghanistan. She's had 48 separate operations on her face, spine, and torso. She retired in 2015. Bittenbender had his left leg partially amputated in 2022 from accumulated damage from exposure to toxic burn pits while deployed in Afghanistan. He retired in 2018. Their goal at the Grand Canyon is to establish a new mark in the Guinness World Records for adaptive athletes on the rim-to-rim-to-rim trail. They're also raising funds for building homes for heroes, which gifts wounded and injured veterans with mortgage-free homes. The nonprofit provided more than 400 homes designed or modified with doors, windows, and interior spaces built to accommodate wheelchairs or amputee equipment for veterans. Bittenbender and Ennis live in houses adapted by the organization. But the veterans cautioned how the trail's deep, harsh descents and the heart-pounding ascents echo their life journeys. Ennis is from Milton in the far west end of the Florida Panhandle. Her father and mother were also Marines. When she turned 17, her parents signed the age waiver to allow her to enlist in the service too. She became a helicopter mechanic for Marine Heavy Helicopter Squadron 362, nicknamed Ugly Angels, based at Marine Corps Air Station Kaneohe Bay in Hawaii. In flight, Ennis was a door gunner, eyeing the terrain from behind a 50-caliber machine gun. In June 2012, during her second deployment to Afghanistan, her helicopter crashed on the way to supply ammunition to troops in the Helmand province. Pilot error, they said. Ennis said, "My pilot choked." The two pilots and three gunners aboard all survived. Ennis was the most severely injured. The machine gun slammed into her face on impact, ripping out her teeth and breaking her jaw. She suffered a traumatic brain injury, dislocated both shoulders, ruptured both eardrums, and had several fractured vertebrae. Her left leg was shredded so badly that despite efforts to save the limb, it eventually had to be amputated above the knee in 2015. During her rehabilitation in California, Ennis tried to drown herself. She survived and was back in the hospital when her father visited her. He said, "The enemy couldn't kill you, and you were going to do it for them?" She recalled. "That was a real wake-up call. I'd been badly injured, but I made it home. A lot of people didn't make it home. You have to live for them and the people they left behind." Ennis fought to stay in the Marine Corps, but after review boards weighed in, she retired. That was the same year that Bittenbender fought his emotions and physical deterioration. A native of northeastern Pennsylvania, Bittenbender joined the Army in 1986 when he turned 18. He served 34 years, rising to the rank of Sergeant Major. While deployed in Afghanistan, he'd been exposed to burn pits where the Army incinerated trash, chemicals, medical waste, rubber, and plastic that created black smoke that was dense and acrid. It left his skin and organs scarred. His blood was laced with toxins. While in Afghanistan that year, Bittenbender's friend was killed in an ambush. Already battling illness, he felt overwhelmed by sadness and was ready to act on the impulse. "I had a rope. I was going to hang myself," Bittenbender said. "I felt I was encumbering my family and my guys. I was in Afghanistan, so if I was going to end up dead on the side of a hill, might as well be there." But Bittenbender said he thought about the last talk that he had with an officer he respected. They were interrupted when the order for the patrol to move out was given. "He'd said to me, 'What do you want to be remembered for in life?'" Bittenbender recalled. "Before I could think of an answer, he had to go. We never got a chance to finish that conversation, but the question stayed with me." Bittenbender and Ennis found a way back to reviving their lives by reaching out to ask for help and offering help in return. "In battle, soldiers don't go in alone," he said. "We have people in front of us, beside us, and behind us. The people you're fighting with are also who you're fighting for. You won't be left behind. But that feeling can evaporate off the battlefield. One stripe or four stars, we all have troubles, Bittenbender said. We lose a lot of service members to suicide. Everybody needs a battle buddy, somebody you know that when the demons hit you in the middle of the night, you can call and know they won't let you go to voicemail. Ennis now lives in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, near Denver, but she's traveled the world to hike mountain peaks and traveled the U.S. advocating for veterans and health issues. Bittenbender works with veterans in his job on the staff of Pocono Raceway and mentors injured and wounded veterans at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. He's run or wheeled in a chair in 44 marathons. Bittenbender and Ennis met last year at a conference in New Jersey where Ennis was appearing. Bittenbender had an idea and he approached Ennis about it. He'd told her that he'd never seen the Grand Canyon and wanted to go. Since he was a young boy, he'd been obsessed with Guinness World Records. Bittenbender asked Ennis whether she would be interested in joining him to try and set a time record for adapted athletes for traversing the rim-to-rim-to-rim trail. I'd never met him, but he was so motivated and it sounded like a great challenge, Ennis recalled. I told him, "You are on, big guy." "We're battle buddies," Bittenbender said. On Sunday, their Grand Canyon support crew included timers to document their speed on the trail, a videographer and a runner who can bring replacement prosthetics to Bittenbender and Ennis if anything breaks on the trail. The duo's progress will be chronicled on Instagram with the materials available online after the hike to show how they overcame challenges along the way. After the Grand Canyon, Ennis plans to summit the world's tallest peak, Mount Everest. She also plans on competing in snowboarding in the 2026 Winter Paralympics next March in Cortina d'Ampezzo, Italy. Bittenbender said, "The Grand Canyon hike is enough for the moment. This is my bucket list," he said. Boy, there's a pair of tough customers. I'm impressed. Veterans who each lost part of a leg in Afghanistan try for new world record with Grand Canyon hike. I wish them luck. Our next article from Stripes.com by Linda F. Hershey from the 21st of April. Special committee would give disabled veterans a voice on accessibility challenges at VA facilities. Washington. Check-in counters for appointments at Department of Veterans Affairs medical buildings often are too high and out of reach for people in wheelchairs. Inadequate curbside parking for vans with mechanical lifts makes it difficult for veterans in wheelchairs to enter some VA clinics and hospitals. Exam tables many times cannot be adjusted to handle the transfer of paralyzed patients. That's a message from veterans advocacy groups urging lawmakers to adopt legislation for reviewing disability accommodations at the VA and make recommendations for improvements. Bills under consideration in the House and Senate would form a 15-member committee to address complaints by veterans advocates about barriers to care for the most physically vulnerable patients, veterans incapacitated by catastrophic injuries and illness. The Veterans Accessibility Act is being led by Senator Rick Scott, Republican of Florida, in the Senate. Representative David Valadeo, Republican of California, has introduced a companion bill in the House titled the Veterans Accessibility Advisory Committee Act. The committee created by the legislation would be responsible for evaluating and reporting on the VA's compliance with federal disability laws, the lawmakers said. More so, veterans with disabilities and their advocates would be included on the committee to share firsthand information and insights about persistent problems to accessing VA care and services. "Using the VA has been tremendous for me, but it's not always as accessible as it could be," said Army veteran Ann Robinson, 55, of Texas, National Vice President of Paralyzed Veterans of America. The nonprofit estimates there are roughly 42,000 veterans living with spinal cord injuries or disease. Whether an appointment room is large enough to fit my wheelchair or even the size of an exam table itself can determine whether I get the medical care I need, said Robinson, who was paralyzed from the chest down while on a military training exercise 25 years ago. She was 29 years old at the time. Congress passed the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 to protect patients with disabilities in healthcare settings. The laws ensure access to services and prohibit discrimination based on disability. Though federal law requires equal access to health services for people with disabilities, VA has struggled to provide fully accessible facilities, said Heather Ansley, Chief Policy Officer at Paralyzed Veterans of America. Doors to some VA facilities do not automatically open, wheelchairs don't fit in the restrooms, and ramps are missing from offices and facilities, advocates said. The committee also would look at the functionality and performance of VA websites for disabled veterans who use adaptive technologies such as voice control to send communications and receive information. Scott said the VA has failed to make its websites, kiosks, and other technology consistently accessible for people with disabilities as required by law. It is unthinkable that federal programs intended to support our veterans would be inaccessible to so many who live with disabilities and rely on these essential services, he said. The legislation is endorsed by several veterans groups, including Disabled American Veterans, Paralyzed Veterans of America, Wounded Warrior Project, and Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. We strongly support this legislation because accessibility improvements must be informed by the experiences of those directly impacted, veterans who rely on VA health care and services every day, said Daniel Contreras, National Commander of Disabled American Veterans. Jose Ramos, a combat wounded Navy veteran who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, said, "Having a voice on a VA advisory committee is critical for post-9/11 veterans disabled by combat wounds and service-connected illnesses." Ramos, who leads government and community relations at Wounded Warrior Project, said, "Many post-9/11 disabled veterans rely on the VA for their health care and disability compensation. These veterans interact with the system the most and have detailed and personal knowledge of accessibility challenges at VA facilities and online," he said. The legislation has the support of Senator Jerry Moran, Republican of Kansas, Chairman of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, and Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, the top Democrat on the committee. Moran said he sees the legislation as making certain that the VA complies with federal accessibility laws no matter where the clinic or hospital is located. In Kansas, and particularly in rural areas, veterans with disabilities face challenges accessing the facilities and services provided by the VA, he said. Similar bills were introduced in the House and Senate in 2023, but did not advance to a final vote. Robinson, a former sergeant, said she's been receiving VA care and services since she was medically retired from the Army in 2000. She suffered life-threatening injuries after the military truck that she was traveling in crashed while on an icy highway in Alaska. Robinson has focused on advocating for paralyzed veterans since her military service ended. "VA is the only place I can go for anything medical," she said. Robinson also said the VA offers highly specialized care and resources not readily available for paralyzed veterans in the community. "My hope is that this legislation will make things better for veterans with complex medical needs," she said. Paralyzed Veterans of America has been working with the VA for so long to ensure greater accessibility, but VA buildings are mostly old. Even when they retrofit, it does not always work out for the best. That special committee would give disabled veterans a voice on accessibility challenges at VA facilities. We'll turn now to Military Times and MilitaryTimes.com for this article, U.S. Navy Warship on First Deployment Makes Two Drug Busts in 72 Hours. This is by Zita Ballinger Fletcher from the 22nd of April. Two alleged drug smuggling operations were brought to a swift halt this month by the Freedom-class littoral combat ship Minneapolis-St. Paul within a 72-hour span, resulting in the seizure of an estimated $12 million in illicit drugs during the ship's maiden deployment. The ship set sail on March 26 from its home port of Naval Station Mayport, Florida, and steamed for the Caribbean Sea and the U.S. 4th Fleet area of operations. Just weeks into the deployment, the crew intercepted 580 kilograms of cocaine and 2,480 pounds of marijuana through combined air-surface operations. "We train diligently and stand ready to execute interdiction missions at a moment's notice," Commander Stephen Frasey, commanding officer of the USS Minneapolis-St. Paul, said in a release. "To be able to make an immediate impact so early on during our maiden deployment is a testament to the hard work and skills of the ship's crew." As an LCS, the vessel, which deployed in support of U.S. Naval Forces Southern Command, is designed for speed and operating in near-shore environments. The ship is currently assigned to Commander Task Force 45, the surface task force of 4th Fleet, responsible for carrying out combined operations, strengthening partnerships with Latin American and Caribbean nations, and supporting law enforcement in counter-drug trafficking operations. The Minneapolis-St. Paul's crew includes an embarked Coast Guard law enforcement detachment, plus the Valkyries of Helicopter Maritime Strike Squadron 50, Detachment 3. The U.S. Navy regularly partners with LADET teams to prevent illegal drugs from reaching the United States through maritime routes. Drug interdictions in the Caribbean are executed by the Coast Guard under the authority of the 7th Coast Guard District based in Miami. The USS Minneapolis-St. Paul executed their duties seamlessly in the combined effort to protect the homeland from illicit maritime trafficking, Rear Admiral Carlos Sardillo, commander of U.S. Naval Forces Southern Command U.S. 4th Fleet, said in the release. "Working in coordination with the Coast Guard and our joint partners, we look forward to seeing continued measurable impact delivered by the professional and talented crew of the USS Minneapolis-St. Paul across the region." That U.S. Navy warship on first deployment makes two drug busts in 72 hours. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, available for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store or from the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And finally, Sun Sounds of Arizona also streams on your Android Echo or Dot device. We return to Stripes.com for this article, "Relatives Marines Honor Ernie Pyle on 80th Anniversary of War Correspondent's Death." This is by Brian McElhaney of Stars and Stripes from the 19th of April. Iashima, Okinawa. Retired Air Force Major Tom Cowan didn't hesitate when asked about his favorite column written by his famous relative, war correspondent Ernie Pyle. It's perhaps Pyle's most well-known dispatch from the Italian front in World War II, The Death of Captain Waskow, dated January 10, 1944. In it, Pyle described how soldiers in the Army's 36th Infantry Division paid tribute to their fallen company commander. That article, just the way he described so eloquently the outpouring of the men to their captain, Cowan said Saturday while aboard the ferry to Iashima, where a ceremony marking the 80th anniversary of Pyle's death would soon begin. "That's what's always most important, and I always use that as an example of how I wanted to lead my troops." Cowan, Pyle's first cousin, once removed through his mother, serves as president of the Ernie Pyle Legacy Foundation. The organization's leadership is largely composed of Pyle's indirect descendants. He and his daughter, Angelica Shockley, became the first of Pyle's relatives to visit the memorial on Iwo Jima, where an obelisk stands near the site where Pyle was killed on April 18, 1945. They joined about 150 Marines, American Legionnaires, and Okinawan officials for the mourning ceremony. The significance of the 80th anniversary brought more attendees than in previous years, said Lawrence Okone, a commander of Okinawa's American Legion Post 28. The post has maintained Pyle's memorial and hosted the annual ceremony since 1952. Many of those World War II veterans are no longer here to tell the stories, Okome, an Army veteran, said after the ceremony. However, Pyle captured those stories specifically for the infantrymen. That story, to this day, still lingers on in the many writings that he published. Born in 1900 near Dana, Indiana, Pyle became known for his down-to-earth reporting on the lives of enlisted troops during some of the war's most significant battles. He began covering the war for Scripps Howard newspapers in 1940 during the German bombings of London, known as the Blitz. He later embedded with troops in the North African campaign in 1942-43 and reported from Italy and France in 1944, the year he received the Pulitzer Prize for his war correspondence. Pyle joined the 77th Infantry Division during the Battle of Okinawa and was killed when the jeep he was riding in came under fire from a Japanese machine gunner on a ridge above. He was buried near the site of his death. His remains were later moved to the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific in Honolulu, also known as the Punch Bowl. He told the story of the American fighting man as American fighting men wanted it told. Both 3rd Marine Expeditionary Force Deputy Commander Brigadier General Trevor Hall and Cowan said during their remarks, quoting President Harry Truman's tribute after Pyle's death, "Few individuals in history have done more than Ernie Pyle to educate us on the cost of conflict and the brutality of war," Hall said. The Ernie Pyle Legacy Foundation also hosted a ceremony Friday at the Punch Bowl where Pyle was reburied in 1949. "He simply set out to tell the truth, one soldier's story at a time," Suzanne Puane Varis Lum, a retired Army general and current director of the Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies in Honolulu, said at that event. "He gave a voice to the warfighter who had no voice during World War II." That's Relatives, Marines, Honor Ernie Pyle on 80th Anniversary of War Correspondence Death. We'll turn now to the Military Officers Association magazine, Military Officer, for this article, remembering the 80th anniversary of the end of the war in Europe. 14 Days to Freedom, How World War II Ended in Europe 80 Years Ago. This is by Lieutenant Colonel Patrick J. Chasson. He is U.S. Army retired. On April 30, 1945, Adolf Hitler committed suicide in a Berlin bunker. Hitler's dream of a thousand-year Reich was about to perish with him. Nazi Germany, already collapsing under the weight of relentless ground and air attacks, would exist as a nation for just one more week. When Germany finally surrendered May 8, 1945, to the Allied powers, the U.S., the United Kingdom, France, the Soviet Union, and other nations, people around the world celebrated the news. Their joy was dampened, however, by a realization of the war's enormous human cost. President Franklin D. Roosevelt, whose inspirational leadership guided the American people through so many of World War II's darkest days, was among the losses. Dying in April 1945, he never witnessed the triumph of his nation and its allies over Nazism. Although Germany was defeated, more fighting lay ahead for the U.S. Across the Pacific Ocean, Japan remained a dangerous foe. The last days of World War II in Europe were marked by many incidents, both tragic and magnificent. Military officers assembled a timeline of select events that led to victory in Europe Day, which took place 80 years ago this month, as well as its immediate aftermath. May the 1st, 1945, Tuesday. Admiral Karl Dönitz, Hitler's chosen successor, forms a German government in the city of Flensburg, northwest of Berlin, near the southern border of Denmark. Operation Chowhound begins, with U.S. Army Air Force's heavy bombers delivering more than 4,000 tons of rations to starving civilians in German-occupied Netherlands. May the 2nd, 1945, Wednesday. The Battle of Berlin ends when the Red Army forces storm Nazi Germany's capital, forcing its city commander, General Helmut Weidling, to capitulate. More than 1 million German soldiers surrender to the Western Allies in Italy and Austria. May the 3rd, 1945, Thursday. Royal Air Force warplanes sink the Nazi ship SS Cap Arcona, filled with concentration camp survivors in the Baltic Sea. An estimated 5,800 people are killed. May the 4th, 1945, Friday. German garrisons in Denmark, Norway, and the Netherlands capitulate to British Field Marshal Bernard Law Montgomery. May the 5th, 1945, Saturday. GIs of the 11th Armored Division liberate the Mauthausen concentration camp in Austria. Canadian forces move in to Amsterdam. Dönitz orders all U-boats to cease offensive operations and return to their bases. May the 6th, 1945, Sunday. The USS Farquhar DE-139 attacks U-881, officially documented as the last German submarine to be sunk by a U.S. Navy warship in World War II. May the 7th, 1945, Monday. Reichsmarschall Hermann Göring, chief of the Luftwaffe, turns himself in to soldiers of the American 36th Infantry Division. General Dwight D. Eisenhower accepts the surrender of all German forces in the West. His victory message to the combined chiefs of staff reads, "The mission of this Allied force was fulfilled at 0241 local time, May the 7th, 1945. May the 8th, 1945, Tuesday. Second Lieutenant Kenneth Swift of the 474th Fighter Group shoots down a Siebel SI-204 transport, reportedly the last Luftwaffe aircraft destroyed by U.S. pilots in World War II. German Field Marshal Wilhelm Keitel signs the instrument of surrender in Berlin during a ceremony witnessed by representatives of the four major Allied powers. In a radio address to the American people, President Harry S. Truman declares victory in Europe. May the 9th, 1945, Wednesday. British commanders accept the surrender of troops occupying the Channel Islands of Jersey and Guernsey. Joseph Stalin announces the Soviet Union's victory over Nazi Germany. May the 10th, 1945, Thursday. German Army Chief of Staff General Heinz Guderian turns himself in to U.S. forces. Red Army soldiers occupy Prague, Czechoslovakia. May 11th, 1945, Friday. German troops holding the French port city of Saint-Nazaire surrender. May the 12th, 1945, Saturday. A herd of 1,200 captured horses, including many prized Lipizzaners, start moving into the American zone of occupation as part of Operation Cowboy. The Battle of Slivice in Czechoslovakia takes place between German soldiers and the Red Army, who are supported by Czech partisans and GIs of the U.S. 4th Armored Division. May 13, 1945, Sunday. The Soviet military halts all offensive operations in Europe. In a radio broadcast, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill declares, "There's still a lot to do," as the war against Japan rages on. May 14, 1945, Monday. German U-boat U-858 completes its surrender to Allied forces at Fort Miles in Lewis, Delaware. Our author is a writer, historian, and a member of MOA from Scotia, New York. In that article, 14 Days to Freedom, How World War II in Europe Ended 80 Years Ago. Well, let's turn now to the VA, Veterans Administration, and our first items are from the Phoenix VA healthcare system from their newsletter, Veterans News Now. And that first thing is the Phoenix VA Virtual Health Resource Center. And the Virtual Health Resource Center is offering technical support to veterans, to family members, and caregivers about all things virtual care. The VHRC staff, they're here to help you use connected devices such as smartphones, tablets, iPads, and laptops to conveniently connect to high-quality VA care. They offer a roadshow at VA clinics on the last Wednesday of the month from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Northwest VA clinic will be April the 30th. The Southwest VA clinic will be May the 28th. And the 32nd Street VA clinic is June the 25th. Their phone number is 602-277-5551, extension 6680. And there are pop-ups at the main VA campus Wednesdays from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the ACC entrance, the 3rd Street and Indian School Road. Those are being offered on May the 7th, May the 14th, May the 21st, June 4, June 11, and June the 18th. The VHRC staff helps veterans use virtual care tools and VA mobile apps. These tools offer care options beyond the traditional office visit. Expanding your access to care is just a few clicks away with the help of the Phoenix VA's VHRC team. And they offer in-person, phone, or video virtual appointments. You can call that number again, 602-277-5551, extension 6680. VA's virtual resources, you can find out more about that at mobile.va.gov/appstore for their various phone apps. They have a virtual health resource center, 602-277-5551, again, 6680 is that extension. And then the Office of Connected Care Help Desk is available at 866-651-3180, and you can press 1 for veterans 24 hours, 7 days a week. The Health Resource Help Center desk is 877-470-5947. They operate Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and of course that's Arizona time, Mountain Standard Time. My Health eVet help desk is at 877-327-0022, and they operate from 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and again, Arizona Mountain Standard Time. Then finally, there's the Any Mobile app, and that's available at mobile.va.gov/app/any. That's A-N-N-I-E hyphen veterans, Annie hyphen veterans. Additionally, Annie is a VA text messaging service that empowers veterans to take an active role in their healthcare by sending various self-care reminders. Messages you receive from Annie include medication reminders, tips for lowering stress, diabetes, sleep trouble, managing chronic pain, hearing loss or tinnitus, tobacco cessation, weight management, and much more. Reach out to your care team or contact the VHRC to learn how to get started using Annie. More information again, search the VA mobile app store or mobile.va.gov/app/any-veterans in your web browser. Then they also announce off-site parking. We know parking can be a challenge at the Phoenix VA. We encourage you to utilize our off-site parking at 61 East Earl Drive, and that's Phoenix, Arizona 85012. They have a shuttle that arrives every 15 minutes. The pickup location is at the ACC South entrance, and there is an instructional video on how easy it is to utilize that shuttle. And that's available at youtu.be. So it's like YouTube with a dot between the U and the B, / MMST1SUR5TO. That's kind of a hard address to get to, but if you go to YouTube and search for Phoenix VA, I'm sure you could locate that video. Then they have a TBI polytrauma clinic is going to be co-locating to the Ruby Clinic. Phoenix VA is excited to announce that the polytrauma/TBI team will officially relocate on May the 9th, 2025, to the Ruby Clinic on the second level of Ambulatory Care Center, the ACC, previously known as the Eye Clinic. This move is part of our ongoing efforts to enhance our services and provide improved care to our veterans. The Ruby Clinic, with its updated facilities, will offer a more convenient and comfortable environment for our patients. With our team now in close proximity, we hope to deliver even better care as we're able to work more efficiently and collaboratively as a team. We look forward to continuing to deliver high-quality, comprehensive care in our new location. And you can get further information or schedule an appointment at 602-277-5551. And the extension for that is 5429 or 1477. They also announced the U.S. Army Reserve birthday. That was back on April the 23rd. It's the 117th birthday of the United States Army Reserve, with the official origins dating back to 1908. In an increasingly complex global environment, today's Army Reserve is a critical component in supporting and sustaining the Army as it responds to acute threats from across the globe. There are Army Reserve communities located in every state in the Union, plus the District of Columbia, Guam, American Samoa, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Reservists have been deployed to some 30 countries. The Army provides a bulk of sustainment forces to the joint fight, and the bulk of those capabilities reside in the Army Reserve, which means the joint force cannot deploy, fight, and win without the Army Reserve. The latter force remains ready to answer the call, providing critical capabilities and ensuring the Army's readiness for every mission, helping the force meet any challenge. Then they also announce Whole Health Month. Begin your whole health journey. Whole health is about you as a whole person and what matters most to you, not just what's the matter with you. You and your care team develop a plan based on your priorities for your health, such as moving more, sleeping better, or waking up with less pain. And then they say they have a website to start your whole health journey, and that's at www.va.gov/wholehealth, all one word, wholeealth/get-involved/get-started.asp. The Phoenix VA offers self-care education and services that go beyond illnesses and injury to improve your well-being based on what matters most to you for your health. Services include well-being group classes, individual health and wellness coaching, and skill-building groups. Taking Charge of My Life and Health, and that's TCMLH, a 6-week group to help you explore what matters most to you and start making a personalized health plan based on your values, needs, and goals with support from like-minded veterans. Health and wellness coaching. You can work on your health, wellness, and mindset with your own health and wellness coach. Your coach helps you set goals and take actions based on what you feel is important to you. Your whole health coach collaborates with you in developing health and wellness goals while supporting you and your medical team. Coaching sessions can be done face-to-face at the Midtown Clinic, virtually, or by phone. Coaching skill building groups. Whole health coaches provide a safe group setting for you to explore the 8 areas of self-care as they relate to you and your goals for enhancing your own health and well-being. Well-being group offerings. Well-being groups are offered Monday through Friday. Some groups focus on physical strength and balance to help lower stress and pain. Other groups focus on being creative and supporting others. All groups support your personal health and well-being. Well-being offerings may include exercise and fitness options, Tai Chi, yoga, guided meditation, music, and creative outlets. Contact your Phoenix Whole Health team to learn more and schedule your group or individual whole health sessions. Call direct 602-277-5551, extension 1281, or contact through secure message. Next from Phoenix VA, be vigilant of scammers targeting SMC benefits and Purple Heart recipients. Veterans who receive higher compensation with Special Monthly Compensation, SMC, Purple Heart recipients, veterans receiving income-based pension or survivor's pension, and those receiving specially adapted housing, SAH, benefits are frequently targeted by bad actors. The increased financial compensation associated with SMC benefits and the visibility of Purple Heart recipients can attract scammers looking to exploit veterans. These scams range from identity theft and fraudulent investment schemes to fraudulent financial services, charging unnecessary fees for services VA offers for free. VA is committed to safeguarding veterans, their families, and caregivers against fraudulent activity, and it provides the following guidance to protect veterans' benefits and avoid benefit payment redirection. Do not share VA.gov usernames, passwords, or answers to security questions with anyone, including family members, accredited representatives, or anyone who receives compensation from their VA benefits. Do not deposit VA benefits directly into a bank account that does not have the veteran's name on it, such as a caregiver's bank account. VA benefits should be deposited into a bank account the beneficiary can access and where the beneficiary's name is included on the account. That's some information from the Phoenix VA newsletter, Veterans News Now. And if you're really interested, you should get on the VA.gov website, search for subscriptions and newsletters, and sign up for that Phoenix VA newsletter if it's applicable to you. Lots of good information and a number of links. We'll turn now to news.va.gov. And our first item is free mental wellness app for veterans and their families. This 24/7 access to live peer social support. This is from Inner World, from the 23rd of April. And then, of course, they have their caveat: sharing of any non-VA information does not constitute an endorsement of products and services on the part of VA. Veterans should verify the information with the organization offering. Inner World is not a substitute for professional mental health therapy. And if you're having thoughts of suicide, call 988, press 1, or visit www.veteranscrisisline, all one word, veteranscrisisline.net. You can unlock free membership to Inner World, a peer social support mental wellness app. Become an anonymous avatar in a community built for veterans and their family members. You can learn life-changing tools and help others on topics like depression, anxiety, trauma, transitioning to civilian life, and more. For a limited time, Inner World is offering free lifetime membership to veterans and their family members. Inner World is also hiring and training veterans who are interested in facilitating mental wellness groups. How to redeem your free membership? Create your anonymous account for free lifetime membership. Download Inner World on your tablet, mobile device, or MetaQuest VR headset. Create an avatar and join your first event. Once inside, you'll have access to both the veteran community and Inner World's larger community. There are over 100 weekly events ranging from educational mental wellness sessions to fun social activities. There's even special veteran support groups where you can connect with fellow veterans or family members who understand what you're going through. You can get that website by going to news.va.gov and searching for hashtag vet resources or vets experience, and you'll find the link that will take you to the Inner World website where you can set up your account. And that's free mental wellness app for veterans and their families. Well, I think we've pretty much run out of time here. There's, of course, more information on news.va.gov. And if you have a chance, go there and examine what's available to you. We, on the other hand, are going to have to sign off for this week's edition of Weekly Reveille. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Thank you so much for joining me. And remember that you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming at a time of your choosing or as it streams by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or by downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app from the Apple App Store for your iPhone or iPad or the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And you can always listen to the Sun Sounds of Arizona stream on your Amazon Dot or Echo.